Chapter 8. "I'm sorry," I said slowly. I must have heard wrong. Surely this 6'6 wall of muscle wasn't interested in a fight with me. I was good in a scrap, sure, but not against giants like him, and not against werewolves, which probably had some kind of super strength and speed factor or whatever. Ralph laughed again. It was a booming sound that shuddered in my bones. Maybe it'd be the last sound I heard before I died. "I can tell you're ex-military, kid, and you've got a real pair on you to come down here and demand something of me. I reckon you'd give me a good fight, and I don't get too many of those these days." I supposed you probably didn't. Someone would have to be dumb as paint or outright suicidal to challenge him. But it seemed like I didn't have much of an option. "If I fight you and I win, you'll tell us what you know about your friend?" Maybe if I kept reminding Ralph that Jameson was his friend, he'd be less likely to bargain with information that could very well save Jameson's life. This wasn't something I felt like leaving up to chance, and just because I was decent in a fight didn't mean I always wanted to fight. Conflict de-escalation had been just as important, if not more so, when I'd served. Force, and especially deadly force, had been a last resort. But Ralph had apparently already made up his mind. "I'm a man of my word," he said with a nod, and he folded his massive arms over his barreled chest. "Standard sparring match, no biting, no aiming for the family jewels. Sound fair?" Those had been the same rules we'd used in the army, so I nodded.
"Leo,"
Kyla said with a nervous glance toward Ralph.
"Are you sure this is the best way to tackle this problem? Werewolves are pretty strong, and he's already, quite large."
"You know what they say," I said, and I gave her a smile that I hoped hid my nervousness. "The bigger they are, the harder they fall." If Carmen had been here, she would have said something like, "The bigger they are, the more easily they can punch a dent in your skull." I was glad she was back at the apartment with Asami. Ralph stepped up into the boxing ring, and after I took off my jacket and shoes, I did the same. I tried to remind myself that I knew what I was doing. I'd been practically unbeatable in my unit. I'd beaten guys Ralph's size before. Granted, they hadn't been werewolves, but it still had to count for something. "Ready when you are, kid." Ralph grinned at me and showed a hint of his slightly pointed canine teeth. "Well, might as well get this over with." I surged forward and collided with Ralph the way a bug might collide with a windshield. I felt the solidity of his body, and he barely seemed to notice me. He didn't even step back. I took a moment to be jealous of his ability to plant himself, and while standing on a boxing ring mat, no less, and then I lurched back to dodge the fist he swung at me. I felt him move the air by my cheek as it missed me by a hair, and I realized he was quick. Now, that just wasn't fair. Someone so large shouldn't get to be that fast, too. If I couldn't be bigger or stronger or faster than him, then I'd have to be smarter. I'd have to force him to lose his balance. And the best way to do that was to force him to move around. I darted around him while trying to catch him in the ankles, the backs of his knees, pressure points that had sent conflicting signals to his brain. They weren't particularly strong blows, and for the most part did little more than annoy him. But he began to move. "You can't dodge me forever," Ralph grunted, and he grabbed my fist as I made to swing at his throat, and then caught me with his own fist clean across the face. For the second time in a week, I tasted blood as my cheek was split open on my own teeth. "Ah! I don't have to," I said, and I forced myself to swallow the blood before it could dribble out of my mouth. Somehow I reckoned this guy wouldn't appreciate me spitting blood all over his pristine boxing ring. "I just have to dodge you longer than you dodge me." I threw another punch, which Ralph caught, but that had been my plan, and my other fist drove into his side at such an angle that he let out a noise. It wasn't a pained cry exactly, or a surprised yelp at the strange feeling, and he looked down at me indignantly before he grabbed my other fist and half shoved, half threw me across the ring. I was back on my feet a moment later, and just as well, because Ralph had crossed the distance and was towering over me. I went low, lower than he could comfortably reach, and punched the side of his knee with enough force to throw him off balance, just for a moment. He retaliated by grabbing me by the scruff of my t-shirt and yanking me backward with both hands. Then he shoved me to the floor, with his weight pinning me. But before he could punch me again, I managed to get my foot under his chest and donkey kick him to force him back a bit. I scrambled to my feet. If I went down again, it'd be over. I needed to stay upright. Upright. I had the control. Ralph obviously knew this too, and he sprang up with, frankly, unsettling speed. I aimed for his solar plexus, was blocked, and then barely dodged as he tried to strike me in the throat. I went for the same spot on his flank as I'd gotten earlier, but I missed, because he was a fraction of a second quicker, and caught me in the stomach before I could land my own hit. I doubled over for a moment and wheezed, but I knew I had to keep moving, so I lurched to the side before he could hit me again. It didn't matter how much I got hit, I just had to stay upright. As long as I didn't fall, I could win this. I would win this. Ralph swung another massive fist toward me, and I managed to duck underneath it. I put all my weight into the uppercut that caught him under the chin. With such force, I heard his jaw snap shut with a sharp clack. He staggered back. I saw my opening. This time, when I aimed for his solar plexus, he didn't manage to block or dodge me, and a dry gasp was forced from Ralph's mouth as my fist drove into his torso. He took another step back, and I didn't let up as I kicked out my leg and hit him in the gut. He made a swipe at my ankle and damn near caught me, but he was still disoriented enough that I managed to just barely evade him. Then he leaned forward and swung at me, and the punch half glanced off my temple. I felt skin split, but the actual force of the blow wasn't very hard, which was just as well, because if he'd caught my temple fully, I definitely would have been down for the count. Instead, I just leaned far enough away to dodge the worst of the blow, and then I surged forward again. I didn't go for his nose, because that could deal some really brutal damage, and instead got him in the eye. Ralph stumbled back, and all I had to do was keep going forward. I fisted my hands in his shirt and forced him to the ground on his back. Then I pinned one of his arms with my knee, the other with my hand, and my other hand pressed down on his throat. It was stuck. I'd won. After a few seconds, I released the pressure from Ralph's throat and arms, stepped back and helped him to his feet. But he was so heavy, he almost dragged me to the floor when he took my hand to stand up. Not bad, kid, Ralph said with a smile. Not bad at all. Yeah, likewise, I said and rolled my shoulders. It made a slightly concerning popping sound on every rotation, but it didn't hurt at least. You're a tough son of a bitch. Literally! Ralph laughed, and it took me a moment to get the joke before I remembered werewolf. I let out a laugh, and then Kyla stepped forward to the edge of the ring. She had a calm smile on her face, and I wondered if she'd expected me to win or not. Either way, she seemed pleased that I had.
That was impressive to watch. I don't spar very often unless it's against Keegan, but you two have really versatile fighting techniques.
Well, you're welcome to come to my Friday classes. Self-defense and hand-to-hand combat. Though unless my eyes deceive me, you probably don't need teaching as much as a chance to practice. I could tell from the way he put emphasis on eyes that he meant the version with a capital letter and not a part of his anatomy. Kyla's smile faltered a little.
We mean you no harm, sir. I'm not actually running this mission in an official capacity. It's half Faye who were going missing, and I knew the Order wouldn't care, so...
Ralph raised a hand, and she fell silent. Not my business. I appreciate that you're taking an interest in something outside the Order's narrow scope of responsibility. I know what it's like to be a part of an organization where you're the minority. You feel pulled between two identities, and it can be hard to reconcile how you should feel and behave. But if you can get Jamie back safely, then I'll tell you everything I can. I hadn't expected this giant of a werewolf to be so articulate, and I couldn't help but stare. But then I remembered, for all their magical abilities and occasionally strange appearances, all these supernatural creatures were people, just like me. They experienced many of the same things I did. It was obvious the magical world had its own biases and prejudices. Just because I'd mentally lumped all magicals together didn't mean magicals themselves did. Honestly, I felt a little embarrassed. I knew what it was like to be shoved into one huge group, to be perceived as monolithic because people couldn't take the time to understand there were massive differences. Not all magical species were the same, just like not all Latinos or all soldiers were the same. What can you tell us about him, then? Jameson Hawthorne. Ralph heaved an enormous sigh, but really anything he did was at least a little enormous, and scrubbed a hand over the back of his neck. I only realized then that he had a tattoo on the inside of his right bicep. It appeared to be of a feather, or maybe a quill. The last time I saw Jameson was on the 1st of May. Well, the day went missing then. Were you the last person to see him? I don't know. Ralph shrugged his massive shoulders. He finished his workout at about 10 and said he was going to a club. I assume he made it there, but it's possible he could have gone missing between leaving here and arriving there.
What club?
Kyla asked, and she leaned forward to rest her arms on the rope barriers of the boxing ring. Her green eyes almost glowed in the dim light. Ralph looked her up and down. Not like he was nervous exactly, and, well, I imagined there was very little that could make a man like him nervous, but like he was hesitant. You're not doing this for the Order, right?
I just want to see these half-fey found,
she said as she shook her head of blonde hair.
If I have to do it on my own time, then so be it.
All right. Ralph nodded. Jamie went to... Well, it wasn't the sort of place eyes would approve of. I wondered what it said about me that the first thing I thought of was some kind of freakishly kinky sex club. I then wondered what would even count for kinky in the supernatural world. Yeah, maybe Carmen had been right. I did need to go on a date. We won't tell anyone. We just want to figure out his pattern of movement, get his last known location. Ralph sighed again before he answered. It's called Pandemonium. It's a Fey-owned club on the water. Very high-end, very... Well, you know what the Sealy are like. I didn't, but I nodded like I did. I had no desire for Ralph to figure out just how new I was to all of this. He'd already called me fresh meat twice.
Pandemonium? As in Paradise Lost?
What, the poem? I asked and looked over at her. Amaryllis, she's the fairy who owns it. Has always liked a joke. But that's all I know, truly. Jamie left here at 10, said he was going to Pandemonium. And as far as I know, he hasn't been seen since. Kyla frowned and twisted a curl around her finger as she thought.
I've heard a few things about that place,
she said after a moment.
If someone is targeting half-fey, it would make sense they would stake it out, but at the same time they'd be risking a full-blooded fairy's ire by targeting her patrons right outside. The fey tend to not like half-humans, but fairy blood is still fairy blood.
Oh, don't worry about that for now. We have a lead. We have someone we can talk to. As for the why, well, we can figure that out once we have Jameson and the others back safely.
You're right.
Kyla smiled as she nodded at me, and then she looked at Ralph.
We'll do everything we can to bring him back safely, I promise.
Ralph grinned at her as he climbed out of the ring. He was over a foot taller than her, and she genuinely looked like a child next to him. I have no doubt of that, little fairy. Just make sure you don't get pulled too deep into those same waters. If Kyla was surprised to be recognized as a half-fey by him, she didn't show it. But maybe werewolves could smell it. Or maybe supernaturals were better at identifying half-fays than I was. I'd only seen two, and aside from slightly pointed ears and bright eyes, they'd seemed entirely human to me.
I won't. And I have Leo to back me up. Plus a few others.
Ah, I see. Ralph said as he grinned over at me. Well, if he can fight whoever took Jamie like he fought me, I reckon you two will be all right. Just let me know if you make any headway, all right? Conlith's been worried sick for him, and so have I. Conlith? My husband. Ralph clarified and showed off the tattoo on his bicep. He's a phoenix, and he's quite fond of Jamie. His magical affinities for fire.
We'll tell you. Please, don't worry.
You say that, but I can't help it. I wasn't expecting anyone to go looking for him. I was half considering looking for him myself, but I didn't want to worry Conlith anymore by putting myself at risk, too. Oh, that made sense, I supposed. Ralph had said as much when we'd walked in. Best to keep your head down. You make fewer enemies like that. Well, if that's the case, then why'd you challenge me to a fight? What would you have done if I'd lost? Ralph flashed me a grin I could only describe as wolfish. I'd have told you anyway. I just wanted to properly motivate you. Kyla and I said our goodbyes to Ralph and went back to the apartment to find Asami and Carmen, several books deep into fairy law and lore. From the look on my sister's face, she was thoroughly sick of it.
Please, tell me you found something useful at the gym.
She groaned and tossed her book aside to drag her hands down her face. And we did, actually. Jameson Hawthorne probably went to this place called Pandemonium. He was heading there when he went missing. Apparently it's a fae club.
Makes sense.
Carmen shrugged.
That could prove dangerous.
Asami said with a furrowed brow.
There are a lot of laws regarding permission in fae. A fae would be fine in a place like that, but humans?
Well, it's a good thing we have a half fae on our team, then. I smiled. Kyla smiled back, but she didn't seem as enthusiastic as me.
You have to understand, fairy magic is powerful. In a place like Pandemonium, where fae laws will apply, it's a prime space for revelries. If you go into a place like that and you're not fae, there's a chance you might never come out. You have to be careful.
Which is why we have you and Asami. You're half fae, and Asami brought half the library with her. And I suspect she's memorized the other half.
I like reading.
Asami went a little red.
And fairy magic is very interesting, but it's also very dangerous. Still,
Carmen said with another shrug.
We need to go. We can't not try and find Jameson and the others. Tomorrow night, then. That should give us enough time to prepare you two on the basics of fairy etiquette.
What? Like, which fork to use? I smirked.
More like how to address them so you don't accidentally sign away your soul.
Kyla answered dryly, and she giggled when I balked.
Yeah, I would like to keep my soul. First thing tomorrow, then. Fairy boot camp. Sir, yes, sir!
Carmen grinned and saluted at Asami, who let out a peal of giggles. Can't be any harder than sparring against a werewolf, I said mildly, and Carmen's head whipped around to stare at me.
You did what? I let you out of my sight for 5 minutes and you fight a goddamn werewolf? Why?
He wanted a fight, I said with a shrug. But he was also the one who told us about Pandemonium, so I can't really begrudge him that.
In return for a fight?
Carmen said as she ducked her head and raised her eyebrows in that universal posture of, are you serious?
Why?
I don't know. I'm not a mind reader. Who cares? You weren't there.
Did you win?
Obviously, I answered with a cocky smile. Come on, monkey, it's me you're talking to.
Funny.
Carmen groaned and rolled her eyes.
So he just told you guys about Pandemonium, nothing else?
There doesn't seem to really be much else.
Kyla said as she settled on the couch next to Asami.
The Order doesn't have an interest in collecting information like that. Not until bodies turn up anyway.
Fuck them.
Carmen and I said at the same time. And then we grinned at each other. Kyla managed a small smile. Right, it's pretty late. We can figure out the details tomorrow, but I think right now we all need rest. Especially if we're going to boot camp.
I'll get the spare sheets.
Carmen said as she got to her feet.
No reason you two should have to sleep on Leo's gross guy bed.
Hey, I'm perfectly clean.
Then you won't mind moving your current bedding to the couch.
Carmen shouted back from down the hall. We kept the spare sheets by the furnace in the utility closet because it kept them warm. There was nothing quite like sliding into an already warm bed with fresh sheets. My bunk in the army had always been on the chilly side.
It's really fine.
Kyla started to protest, but I put up my hands. I'm just fucking with her. There's no way you guys are actually sleeping on sheets I've already slept in. It'll take 5 minutes, and we need to make up the couch for me anyway. Kyla acquiesced with a sigh, though it was clear she and Asami still wanted to protest. As a compromise, Carmen and I let them help us make up the beds, and as they brushed their teeth, Carmen bemoaned the emptiness of the fridge to me.
We're gonna have to make a grocery run tomorrow before our big magic spy mission.
She said, with her head stuck in the fridge as if looking more closely would reveal previously invisible food.
Unless our new friends fancy ketchup with pickles for breakfast.
Why in God's name do we have pickles? I demanded, and wrenched the door from her hand to glower inside the fridge too. Sure enough, there was a jar of pickles, and I scowled at my sister. You freak.
Let he who is without fucked up taste buds cast the first stone! Mr. I like pineapple on pizza.
I'm indifferent to it. It's not awful. It's not amazing. It's just fine.
Nuh-uh.
Carmen said, and she shook her head firmly.
I refuse to be judged for my taste in food by the likes of you. I'll make a run to the store tomorrow. Did Kyla mention if she was allergic to stuff or vegetarian or anything like that? I don't know what half Faye eat.
No, but I didn't ask. What about Asami?
Mild shellfish allergy, which is fine. We never have it in the house anyway.
I then heard a door open behind me and turned to see Kyla and Asami as they emerged from the bathroom. Kyla was wearing one of Carmen's oversized t-shirts that she used as pajamas and a pair of shorts. Asami had evidently brought her own pajamas, which consisted of a black vest and a pair of flannel pants. She'd also pulled her long black hair up into a messy bun.
Well, good night,
Kyla said, and she sounded more than a little awkward. But to be fair, this entire situation was bizarre, even by magical world standards. Not to mention, we'd only known each other for 2 days. I was glad at least that Asami was here. They probably both felt more comfortable having a friend with them, like how I'd felt more comfortable in the sanctuary for having had Carmen with me. Yeah, good night. If you guys need anything, just let us know.
Oh, I'm sure we'll be fine. Your bed looks super comfortable. Only one way to find out,
Carmen said, with another grin that I very pointedly ignored. Though I did shoot her a glare after Kyla and Asami had gone into my room, and then I headed into the bathroom to get myself ready for bed. The couch was definitely less comfortable than my bed would have been, but it was still better than my old bunk. I shifted until I got comfortable and closed my eyes while thinking of the two women in my bed who could do magic. My sister in her own bed who was safe, and the blonde man back in Denver who was recovering from a stab wound. And soon enough, I drifted off to sleep and dreamed of what it would be like to do magic. The next thing I knew, I was being prodded awake. I was a little surprised to find myself being woken up by someone, since I was so used to waking up before everyone else. But I guess I must have been particularly tired. Either way, I opened my eyes to see Carmen standing at the end of the sofa and leaning over me.
You drool in your sleep.
Good morning to you, too. I scowled up at her as she leaned back, and I sat up, at which point I both heard and felt my shoulder and neck pop loudly.
God, you're like a glow stick. Those army beds must have fucked up your back.
I've had less comfortable nights, I said defensively, as I stood up and stretched, which only brought on more popping noises. Though none come to mind right now.
You only have your chivalrous self to blame,
she drawled as she poured coffee from the machine into a mug and set it on the counter. I swiped up the mug with an appreciative noise. I hadn't been able to rely on coffee in the army, since the enemy wouldn't wait around for 20 minutes so you could caffeinate yourself. But I still liked the taste, and I definitely felt a little bit more alert. Asami and Kyla came out of my room just as Carmen was finishing her own coffee, and once everyone was fed and dressed, we got down to work. The first order of business was for Asami and Kyla to teach us how to conduct ourselves around fairies, so we didn't, in Kyla's words, accidentally sign away our souls.
Names have power in fairy,
Kyla explained seriously once we were clustered around the coffee table and surrounded by the books that Asami had brought from the sanctuary.
Every fairy has a true name, which, if you know, gives you power over them. Thousands of years ago, the Seely Queen and Unseely King would demand each of their followers to tell them their true names in order to ensure perfect loyalty. So when a fairy asks, may I have your name, you have to reply very carefully. You can't give a false name, though, because it's considered an offense to lie to fairies.
Asami added, and Kyla pointed to her.
Sami's right,
she said with a nod.
Since fairies can't lie, they believe outright lying to them is both rude and uncreative. They won't like being tricked, but if you trick them by twisting the truth, they'll at least respect you. So what do we do about the name thing? Don't give them your name. Tell them you may call me Carmen, so it's clear that you're not handing anything over to them. The same goes for fae food. In general, you should just avoid drinking or eating anything. Fairies would capture humans and feed them in order to trap them in fairy.
She held up the book she was reading to show us a drawing of a man ensnared in vines, as an inhumanly beautiful woman held an apple to his mouth.
Even half-fae aren't immune to the food thing,
Kyla added, as she twisted a lock of hair around her finger again. She glanced nervously at the drawing, and I wondered if it brought up some unpleasant memories for her.
So, when we go there, don't accept so much as a glass of water, even if you pay for it. Unless they explicitly state that it won't trap you, you can't assume anything. Don't assume anything, and never take anything at face value. Fairies might not be able to lie, but they're still tricksters. Got it, no giving anything, no taking anything, no lies.
Carmen said as she scribbled down notes on a pad of paper.
Anything else, Major? Don't thank a fairy.
Kyla said, and when Carmen and I both looked at her in bewilderment, the blonde spread her hands as she explained.
If you thank them, the implication is you will one day forget the thing they did for you, or that you are so much in their debt that you could never repay them. You should offer them your gratitude, but don't use the word thanks, even to thank one another. It's considered poor taste, even if it's not an outright offense.
Got it. No lies and no thank yous. And I'd thought the army had strict rules.
This Amaryllis woman had better have some good information on Jameson and the others. What's the underground scene like with fairies? Do they trade gossip a lot? In a manner of speaking.
Kyla nodded.
Gossip is considered a commodity, as much as any kind of knowledge, so they would literally trade for it. It's not a guarantee everyone will know everything, but you can assume rumors will have made the rounds.
When Carmen decided to take a break from fairy lessons to run to the store and get something we could actually eat for lunch, Asami decided to go with her, which left Kyla and I alone in the apartment. I watched her brew tea for a few minutes, and then I began rummaging in my pocket for the job flyer. I pulled it out and wondered why I was bothering to check it, when I knew no further information would have magically materialized since I'd last looked at it. After a moment, I pulled out the other flyer, too. The 50 grand one that had been for the Phoenix job. "Hey, Kyla," I asked, and when she turned to look at me, I held up the Phoenix flyer. What actually is the situation in Phoenix? She flinched, as if I'd struck her, and turned back to her tea. There was a long moment of silence before she spoke.
Well, no one knows the details, but that's part of the problem.
She answered, and then she sighed as she wrapped her hands around her mug and carried it back to the couch to sit down next to me.
All we know for sure is that a lot of people have gone missing. Humans mainly, but a couple seers. Any time any eyes went there to try and figure out what was going on, they went missing too. We never found any of their bodies, never figured out where they ended up. Nothing.
I remembered what she'd said about bodies in the supernatural world. How they tended not to stay secret for very long. But you know they're being killed?
Well, we don't know if the eyes are, but the humans, we've found pieces.
Pieces? I swallowed uncomfortably.
Human authorities have been attributing it to animal attacks, because the bodies that are in one piece are just horribly mutilated. But the supernatural world, the Order, we've sensed some kind of strange magic coming off those bodies. Moreover, we haven't been able to identify any of the perpetrators or track them. Something is clouding their auras. Phoenix has just become this black box.
But if you can sense their auras, then surely you can track where they've been, right? I frowned.
Well, yes and no. Footprints can be washed away, smells can fade, and most eyes can only see very fresh, strong auras. You and Carmen are actually very unusual.
Yeah, you've mentioned, I said in a vague attempt at lightening the mood. Kyla smiled, but it faded from her face a moment later.
The Phoenix case is rapidly becoming a stain on the Order's reputation. None of the eyes who have been sent on that job have returned. Almost all of the human victims have been accounted for, at least partly, but the eyes, no bodies, no pieces, nothing.
I looked down at the crumpled flyer in my hand, with the 50,000 winking at me conspiratorially. No wonder the Order had had to slap such a hefty price tag on something like this. And no wonder no one was taking it up. Carmen had sensed something wrong with the flyer, with Phoenix as a whole, and I trusted her gut like I trusted mine. Something was definitely very wrong there, and at least for now, we were woefully under-equipped to try and handle it. I reached out to touch Kyla's shoulder, and unlike yesterday in the bar, she didn't even start. She seemed to lean into the touch, and from how her eyes darted around, I reckoned she could see my aura glowing brighter. Hers looked brighter, too, but that wasn't why I'd reached for her. We're going to figure this out, not just the Jameson thing. We'll take on other jobs, we'll do everything we can to keep people safe. But you also have to remember you can't take the entire weight of the world on your shoulders. Phoenix clearly sucks right now, But it's not just your job to fix it.
I know that.
Kyla looked at me and smiled, but the expression quickly faltered.
But it's the not knowing. Something is deeply wrong there, and I might not sense magical threats like Carmen seems to be able to, but I can tell that much. There's something rotten there. And if someone doesn't stop it, I genuinely believe it could do enough damage to expose our world to humanity again. Or worse.